Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Sacramento County will have a new sheriff in more than a decade. Sheriff Scott Jones is moving from the position he's held for 12 years for a bid for Congress. The sheriff's department is responsible for 1.5 million residents, as well as the county jail and Rio Cosumnes Correctional Center. And there are just two candidates in this race, which means in all likelihood, this will be decided during the primary election, which is in less than 3 weeks. Yesterday, I spoke with both candidates, Undersheriff Jim Barnes, currently second in command, and State Assembly member Jim Cooper. The lawmaker also retired from Sacramento County Sheriff's as a captain and actually ran for sheriff back in 2010 and lost to Sheriff Jones. We interviewed both candidates separately with the intention to have an open-ended conversation and to listen to how they would lead the next chapter of the Sheriff's Department, as well as their views on police reform, the rising crime, and crisis of homelessness. We're starting off with Sacramento County Undersheriff Jim Barnes, who has been with the county for more than two decades, with roles encompassing a homicide detective, sexual assault investigator, and leadership positions within corrections and the county jail. You were born and raised in Modesto, a Sacramento State graduate, played football, earned a degree in social sciences. You now have 24 years with Sacramento County Sheriff. You're second in command, but you also may be an unfamiliar name to some. What brought you to a career in law enforcement?
Well, I'll tell you, never in my wildest dreams did I ever think I would, one, get into law enforcement and be here having conversations with all of you about running for sheriff. But I look at life as a journey. And, you know, when I was done playing football at Sacramento State and I had earned my degree, I did coach there for a year. And I thought maybe that was going to be my path. But I chose to go over to the probation department for just shy of a year. And while I was there, a friend of mine came through who was I had played with, but it was also working with the sheriff's office. And he asked me to go on a ride along. And I was hooked just because of the service of the community, to be able to help those who need protection from others. And it just felt right. And I went into the academy in 1998. And here we are 24 years later as the number two person in an organization. It's one of the largest sheriff's offices in the country.
Well, with that perspective of 24 years in law enforcement, why do you believe there have been growing passionate calls for police reform enough to regularly over, especially in recent years, bring large crowds to the streets, especially in recent years, as I mentioned?
You know, what I've seen in as continuous service in the sheriff's office is you've seen where there's more incidents that you're seeing being captured on the media, you know, the calls for body cameras, of which we've transitioned not only body cameras and patrol and investigative teams, but we're also transitioning into body cameras for the correctional setting too, for that transparency. And I will say, I think George Floyd, we've seen many incidents, not only locally, but nationally, that really have impacted not only our communities, but obviously the nation. But when you watch George Floyd, when you had officers standing by and allowing that to happen to him is really, I feel, I don't say a difference maker, but from a law enforcement perspective, it was that time of need where I told my officers, hey, we're always solution driven, but right now we need to be quiet and just listen. What does the community need? How do we come together, provide a better service and not compromise public safety? And the relationships I've established in the communities with the community leaders and community-based organizations has allowed me to come to tables because people trust me. And I say, when I come to the table, I'm going to deliver. That's what we do. But we have to be committed to doing the work long after the TV cameras are gone, long after the politicians are gone. Really, when the work is now, when it seems like everything is okay, when that's when we really need to get to work and really put in some of the fundamental shifts on how we approach law enforcement.
How do you view the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, you know, I tell you, when I look at what it is as the movement it stands for, Black Lives do matter. We do. I think where it really transitioned is when some people under that same title were causing destruction in communities and breaking windows and it turned. You know, I think when I watch people walk and protest downtown, because I led those teams downtown, and you can hear the pain and the anger. And it's like, okay, help us understand. And what can we be doing better as law enforcement in providing that service? But when it transitioned under some people utilize the Black Lives Matter movement and then really started creating destruction in some of the communities. And I felt that is where, unfortunately, it blurred really the mission of what it stood for. And so that was my take on it. But I tell you, I'm excited about the work that we're doing right now in Sacramento, and I'm really optimistic and excited to see where we can take this moving forward, because I think we're going to be able to put Sacramento on a roadmap with the allied agencies, with the community partners. And so when other areas are looking, how did you get there? We'll say, here's your blueprint and roadmap. And it takes the commitment from everybody sitting at the table.
Yeah. And when you're talking about those protests, some that were destructive, I mean, those were often the result or in response to the deaths of unarmed civilians, largely men of color, at the hands of officers. And your professional life has been wearing a badge and leading others. With your experience, also just as a human being taking this in like the rest of us, have there been instances where you think this death could have been prevented with a non-lethal outcome? What do you view as law enforcement's role to improve or change?
Well, it's one, we always have to improve our training. We always have to be on the forefront and the tip of the spear of innovative training on de-escalation techniques, training as far as any defensive tactics that we might have to have. So everybody is, you know, from a foundation, if you look at, you just mentioned, we're all human beings and we all grew up differently. You know, I grew up in South Modesto where sometimes the issues were handled in a street fight and some were sit down and talk. So everybody is raised differently and experience different experiences and have different filters when it comes to how do you solve these issues. So it's my job as a leader to make sure everybody is at the same level when it comes to training, when it comes to decision making, and really educating the community on what we are doing. I think in law enforcement, we're more reactive. You know, when there's a call for justice and we say, well, we're doing this and this, it almost seems too late, as opposed to being very educational on the forefront and allowing community leaders into what we're doing in the academies, in the training, in the hiring process, in the promotional process. So it really doesn't seem like it's a mystery.
Have you personally demonstrated that improvement or that change within your 24 years with Sacramento County Sheriffs? Have there been moments where you believe maybe you would have handled a situation better with the hindsight of 2020 and growing?
Yeah, you know, when you look at things, you know, I look back at my career and I've always, you know, said I try and conduct myself professionally, but I will tell you, when I look at my time in homicide, this job will change you. It started with the death of my mother and I never really dealt with that. You just kind of compacted those issues. She was the rock and foundation of my life. And then compounded with seeing over 300 dead bodies and having to do death notifications more times than I care to admit. And you've seen the destruction it brings to families. And, you know, I went to a dark place because I couldn't control my thoughts at night. And so was I maybe more short or, you know, more, you know, abrupt whenever in a conversation looking back? Yeah, I probably was. But I look at, it's a culmination of factors of what I know I was going through, the stress I was under of working homicide. And so I look at ways now for law enforcement. How do we unpack that earlier so we don't have officers working through frustration? Now, think about this. We have law enforcement officers who got in this profession because they said they want to protect our communities. And over the past 2 years between the pandemic and you have segments of the population saying we need to be doing this enforcement, non-enforcement. And then you look around, you turn into some of the civil unrest. And they're going home and having dinner with their families and they're saying, I got to go back to work. And some of the families are saying, why? I got to protect my community. But what's being displayed on TV, it almost appears, is it worth it? And I think it's important right now for my leadership to really say it is important. It is a noble profession, but we do have to be willing to sit at the table and make adjustments throughout the remainder of law enforcement and our existence. And that's my commitment as a leader, to continuously have conversations on where can we improve and where can we do our best to really educate the communities as in what we're trying to achieve. Because I'll tell you, everybody that shows up within the sheriff's office, from professional staff to the uniform staff, they're committed to Sacramento County. They're committed to this community because when they leave work, they go home. And their families are being raised in these communities. And so everybody's committed to making it a safer place.
You have the endorsement of current sheriff, Scott Jones. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, I appreciate the work that Sheriff Jones has done. Him and I are different. You know, I've worked for four different sheriffs in my time in 24 years. And I'd like to say, when people go, who are you going to, are you going to be just like it? I'm me. And what I'm really doing is I have the humility to really say, all right, let's get to work on some of these. And I keep coming back to the issues because there is that call for change for law enforcement, you know, and I'm like, I'm here to listen to it. I'm here to put together the navigate the waters of this, but also not compromise public safety. And that's where we need to find that balance. So I'm excited about it. I appreciate the endorsement, but you know, I tell you, I'm really proud of the endorsements and the support I have from community leaders, because those are the individuals that are really putting the work in our communities. And I take a lot of pride in that.
And I understand that obviously you are your own person with your mm-hmm. own lived experience. But Jones has been the sheriff for half of your tenure, and he has controversial moments described mm-hmm. at times as uncollaborative, closed door, defiant with releasing records of deputy misconduct and abuse, legally pushed to do so ultimately by the Sacramento Bee, and also a contentious relationship with an appointed inspector general, especially tasked with oversight over the sheriff's department. Have these controversial moments in leadership shaped you as a law enforcement officer that ultimately leads you to running for this position?
So as you talk about some of those challenges that the sheriff has had, and some self-inflicted, I like to get behind, you know, closed doors and work through the issues. And then that way we can have that united front. We may not always agree on everything, but we have to be able to have these tough conversations and not air it out in public, because that's not where I think people need to see. People need to see that our community leaders, county leaders, are working together to solve some of these issues. When you start going back and forth in public, I think that's what it is. There's a blame game that happens, and I'm not about that. We'll own every mistake that we have, and I'll give credit to the membership and the agency whenever everything positive that happens.
In addition to Sheriff Jones, you also have the endorsement of former Sacramento County Sheriff John McGinnis, as well as the Sacramento County Deputy Sheriff's Association, among other endorsements. But you didn't get the endorsement of Sacramento County District Attorney Anne Marie Schubert, who is running also for California Attorney General. Both Schubert and Jones, they led the county in their respective fields alongside each other for 8 years. Why do you think she went with a candidate who isn't currently in law enforcement?
Well, I would ask, you know, I would have her try and explain that, because I have a great relationship with District Attorney Schubert, and I know she's confident in my leadership ability. I know she's trying to achieve her aspirations and furtherance at the state level. And I know that the men and women inside the District Attorney's office don't share her, her view on that endorsement. I've had personal conversations with people, and I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm, you know, what people choose and who they choose to endorse, that's an elected. And I get that. But I look at when the community leaders are getting behind, you know, me, because they tell me that they know I've been at the table, I'm willing to do the work. It's nice to have elected official endorsements. But again, I take more pride when I have faith-based leaders that I'm working with and community leaders that are engaging and want me to lead the future.
That brings me to the county jail, which the Sacramento County Sheriff also oversees. I mean, there's a slew of issues. In 2019, reaching a settlement over conditions of inmates, the jail psychiatric services caseload doubled from 2004 to 2018, not to mention COVID outbreaks during the pandemic, the release of inmates to downtown, regardless of where they were arrested. And there have been multiple recent high-profile tragic incidents that are connected to that, from charges stemming from the downtown mass shooting last month to the suspect charged with the murder of a woman in her Lamb Park home. I understand that there are policies and there are laws in place, but as someone who is a commander, what is falling through the cracks that the jail can solve?
We have mechanisms in place where someone gets, you know, charged with a crime, and then we're the safety and security, obviously, of that jail. And then you mentioned the mental health that goes with an outside contract that doesn't fall into the sheriff's office. The conditions of the jail falls into the county department of general services. And so a lot of the fingers get pointed at the sheriff's office. And I look at how do we work with all of our partners to, one, improve the conditions. For me, it was the transparency. So body cameras is going to be huge for the community to understand what's happening in there. And so when we look at ownership, is the downtown partnership, and you talk about the releases that go down there, I'm already working with the downtown partnership and finding ways when individuals are released, because we're having to look at some of these arrests too from some of the outlying agencies. Is it a public intoxication? Is it someone who's under the influence? And is it a solution to their issue in their community and they come downtown? So we're looking at ride share options of when someone is released to take them back to the communities in which they were contacted. And then I'm working, you know, really hand in hand with the county through the Jail Diversion Treatment Resource Center, JDTRC, and finding ways and mechanisms when law enforcement may, you know, contact someone and it's a citable offense, instead of taking them go to the jail, take them to the JDTRC to see if they can be connected to resources for housing, maybe counseling or whatever it may be when it comes to mental health crisis. And also even CalAIM, it might be assistance financially to help them. And so everything that we talk about that is kind of, I would say, rippled into downtown is I'm already working with them and I have those relationships. And I think the solution's long-term.
I want to get back to transparency because you've mentioned body cameras. Why is the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department lagging behind in body cameras for deputies and correctional officers?
Well, in correctional officers, we're not, I don't believe we're lagging behind as far as the body cameras. The deputies, I know the sheriff a few years ago had put it on, you know, put it to the board that we were open to it, and it became a financial. I don't know what that was, but obviously we're there, and we can say it's taken too long, but we're here, and that is allowing us. And now for me as a leader, we're also able to review that body camera footage for what type of customer service are we providing. You know, is it a high level that is expected as professionals? So that for me is from where I sit right now is a valuable tool. We've been able to exonerate some conduct that has been claimed against an officer, but we've also we're holding people accountable when that allegation comes through and we see it on body camera footage. So as far as in the correctional setting, I'm excited about it because I don't believe we're behind the curve on that.
There have been two mass shootings in Sacramento this year. Nationwide, the firearm homicide rate is up 35%. Since the pandemic, it's the highest level in 25 years. There are 15 million more guns in circulation than prior to the pandemic, and that comes from UC Davis. The sheriff is responsible for approving concealed carry weapon permits. What role do firearms play in the rise of firearm violence? And that also includes suicide.
Well, I will tell you, when we talk about firearm violence, statistics show that the violence that's being committed in the community are not from concealed carry permit holders. These are from people that are prohibited from carrying these firearms and are getting access to them. And with the improvement of technology and 3D laser printing, there's people that are making them in their garages. So they're able to access them a little bit more. You know, California has some of the strictest gun laws in the nation. And, you know, right after the mass shooting downtown, we had elected officials saying we need tougher gun laws. And we haven't been able to enforce what we have now because the accountability based at the state, you know, the legislation where my opponent's from, is allowed through Prop 47, Prop 57, and it's shown more lenient where people are not being held accountable, so much so that we're having to really partner with our federal partners right now because with early release and zero bail, people are getting arrested for a firearm, and we have it in the statistic where in the morning and later that night or the afternoon they get released, later that night they're caught with another firearm. And so it's scary that many firearms are in our community.
Yeah. And given that you're talking about propositions, I mean, you're critical of bills that have become law, but in the spirit of collaboration and talking with those you might disagree with, have you ever testified at the state capitol or worked with local lawmakers who represent Sacramento County?
I have not, no.
Why? In terms of the collaboration, because it directly impacts the work you do and you know, the goal to protect the community.
No, I would love an opportunity to be able to go down and testify and speak to what's happening in our communities and really speak to it with bringing the community leaders with us and everybody that's involved. And, you know, when we have an individual or individuals go down and testify, I think if we take it as a holistic approach that we're taking this together as a team, not just law enforcement leaders, but community leaders, and saying we have to have this impact or make a difference as far as the impact that's having our communities, because our youth are seeing this happening and it's playing out right in front of their eyes. And that's why I say I think we have to get better, from a lawmaker standpoint, from a law enforcement standpoint, but just again, instead of pointing fingers that we see right now playing out in public, let's just get to work. And that's what I'm committed to doing.
I'm curious about what you think the sheriff's role is in responding to those experiencing homelessness. I actually had the opportunity to follow the Sacramento County Sheriff Homeless Outreach Team, the HOT team, for about 6 months during the first year of the pandemic. And the goal is not to criminalize those experiencing homelessness, but to connect them to services and housing. However, at that time, the team comprised 7 members for the entire county. We're talking just before Roseville, down through the Delta to Antioch. What's the challenge to scaling that up?
Well, the challenge is funding. And, you know, if we can have additional funding, obviously we want to be able to get increased staffing. For me, I think as we're working with the county partners on looking at these encampment response teams, or how do we, I say force multiply, not just from the sheriff's office, but really from the team standpoint, because in those environments, as you just mentioned, we should be just safety security. We show up, we let the professionals get in there, engage with the population, get the resources, and we step back and only engage when they ask us to, or when we need to, the rises. But for me, it's how do we, as I would say I've traversed my journey into my leadership role now as undersheriff, is there's a lot of amazing work being done in the county, from nonprofits to county agencies. But I don't believe we're doing the best work together. And that's what I'm excited about, is bringing all the stakeholders together.
What is your view on enforcement with encampments? And if people are forcibly removed, where do these people go?
Well, that's it. Where do you take them? You know, I mean, and when we talk about having to move, there's usually created for us to move an encampment right now. There is a whole bunch of work that goes into it. We look at environmental impacts. We talk about safety and hazards. Are they occupying a sidewalk where children now have to step into the roadway, creating a hazard to get around to go to school? So we do a lot of homework on it. We usually put a big binder together. We present it in collaboration with the supervisors, county supervisor's office, saying, this is an area that's come to our attention. This is how we would like to address it. And then working with the navigators as far as home transitional housing, how can we get in there? So when it's not just an enforcement and a move, where are you going to move them? Let's have a place to take them.
Finally, 1 year from now to the day, yes, if elected sheriff, what do you hope we talk about?
Well, I hope we talk about, well, I know what we will be talking about is some of the statistics from some of the ideas we're talking about now, from risk needs assessments on the front end when it comes to the jails, talking about what ripple effect that's having in our communities on a reform side of things, talking about some of the great work. I know there's some stay safe, I think it's, yeah, safe stay locations that they're looking in the county, as being able to talk about how we're collaborating with those areas. But just the continued work that we're doing with community, as we've introduced in the North area when I was a commander, is community response teams. So when there's a violent crime in the community, we're coordinating with a group of community-based organizations that respond with us. Because what I've learned is this: there may be a shooting and a tragedy in a community. We show up, we take statements, we render aid and try and find the people responsible, but we leave and that trauma is still there. So partnering with our community-based organizations for them to do wraparound services for the family and be the liaison for the family, so when there's a question that rises, they can contact us because we have that relationship. And also identify areas, which you'll see, we're going to identify areas with our community partners, whether it's a problem apartment complex. How do we get all of our partners together and say, let's start addressing it on the front end where we're the last ones through the door? And so that's what I'm looking forward to talking to you about, of how not only talking about it, I have a saying, I'm about being about it. And so I'm not just saying it because this is the time and we're 21 days away from an election. I've been doing the work continuous for 24 years. I've established those relationships with the stakeholders. And I do have a great relationship with all the county board of supervisors, contrary to what my opponent will say. But he puts a blame game on my current boss. And I'm not my current boss. I know my relationships are strong with all our county partners and even the downtown partnership.
Under Sheriff Barnes, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to a conversation a year from now.
And that is Sacramento County Undersheriff Jim Barnes, who is running for sheriff. Our conversation was recorded yesterday. Up next, I'll share my conversation with Assemblymember Jim Cooper, who's running for Sacramento County Sheriff as well. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're devoting the majority of the hour to the Sacramento County Sheriff's race, which will likely be decided on the primary election, which is coming up in less than 3 weeks on June 7th. As I mentioned, we interviewed both candidates separately yesterday with the intention to avoid a debate and have an open-ended conversation about views on police reform, rising crime, and the crisis of homelessness. You just heard from the first candidate, Sacramento County County Undersheriff Jim Barnes about why he believes he's best suited to lead a department serving 1.5 million residents. We're now moving to the second and final candidate, California Assemblymember Jim Cooper. The Democratic lawmaker represents the Sacramento area. Prior to the state capitol, however, Cooper was mayor of Elk Grove and is a 30-year veteran with the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department. Cooper actually ran against Sheriff Scott Jones in 2010 and lost in a narrow race. I spoke with the assembly member about why he's giving the sheriff's race a second try and how being a lawmaker will shape how he approaches the position if elected. Assemblymember Cooper, welcome to Insight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you were the first mayor of Elk Grove, 8 years now at the Assembly. But before that, 30 years with Sacramento County Sheriff's Department. You retired as a captain. What drew you to law enforcement?
You know what? I was going to American River College, working at Sacramento 6, driving at Bradshaw 50. And there were a couple of deputies working there off duty who I met, developed a friendship with, and they talked me into taking the test. So ended up doing 30 years there. Great career. I love it. It's a calling to be a law enforcement officer.
Yeah. This actually isn't the first time you ran for sheriff. You ran in 2010 and you lost to Sheriff Scott Jones in really a narrow race. Sheriff Jones has since been reelected and is now running for Congress. How did that loss shape you, especially now 12 years later, you're going for it again?
Made me a better person, a more well-rounded leader. And that's the important thing. Coming to the legislature for 8 years, working on statewide issues, really national issues, and having an effect because most of the funding in the counties and cities comes from the state of California. So it really helped and shaped me and developed me as a leader.
In recent years, while you were a lawmaker, you have seen and witnessed protests across Sacramento calling for police reform. I mean, what they want to change is a period of law enforcement that you were a part of. But with the perspective of going from wearing a badge to shaping laws and policy, what do you say to those who want systemic change within law enforcement?
There have been a lot of reforms, some good and some bad, and some done in a vacuum. And part of the issues we're seeing right now with the increase in crime, violent crime, is because of some of those laws that were passed. So they were in such a hurry to pass so many laws that in the end, I think it ended up hurting the criminal justice system in some aspects.
And we will get to that rise in crime in just a moment. But when we're talking about the rallies and the demonstrations, you know, some were peaceful, some had also been destructive, especially in recent years. I mean, given that this is your home and you have long been in leadership positions to also represent and protect residents, do you support why people are calling for change?
I understand why. And that's why we have a First Amendment to go out and voice your concerns and protest. But protests need to be peaceful in the end. When people's property is destroyed, it does nobody any good. Look at downtown Sacramento. They still haven't recovered from some of the issues that happened down here. So it's important to really think about that.
There's also been calls to dramatically change funding law enforcement, from diverting resources to social workers and mental health counselors tasked with de-escalating volatile and difficult encounters. What's your view on that? Where do you stand on that?
I think some of that needs to happen. There's a balance, though. And I'll tell you what, the first time someone in mental health gets injured or killed, that's going to change things dramatically because you never know what you're dealing with. And it can change on the turn of a hat. And that's really the most important thing. Mental health, we're in a crisis right now. What's ironic, though, and I've authored some bills and talked about it in the legislature, at some point, someone has to be the adult in the room and put these folks under conservatorship. No one wants to do that. And in some people's minds, they would rather have that person be out and have freedom, walking around with no clothes on in 30-degree weather than to be the responsible person and really deal with it. And some of these folks be better off, not in jail, but in some type of facility. They can get, you know, meals and medications and hopefully get okay at some point.
Well, if we're going to get into the crisis and the issue of homelessness, I mean, it has just ballooned and some of our most vulnerable residents are experiencing homelessness. I mean, this is a public health. It is a safety. It's a humanity issue. It impacts every single one of us. And one that has just grown since your time in the state legislature. Some would argue ineffective policies by lawmakers are a big part of the problem. As sheriff, if elected, how would you be the best solution to this crisis and this problem?
Well, number one, the state funds the counties and the cities. The money's pushed down. So the state's not in the homeless business. As far as the hotels and motels being converted, the state doesn't convert them. The local jurisdictions do. So they have a part in that. But I agree with you. A lot of money has been spent towards homelessness. It's gotten worse. You know, and the sheriff, law enforcement has a part in it, But obviously mental health and a lot of other services need to do that, a home building. So, but the issue is it's been very heavy on housing part and very light on the mental illness and also substance abuse. Because a lot of folks that have the opportunity to go in don't want to go in for a myriad of reasons. So you can't reason with some of these folks. So they've got to realize housing is not the answer. And I'll be honest with you, when they decriminalized drugs, that made a big impact on it because, you know, folks did go to drug court and got help and got off of drugs. You're not seeing that anymore. So, and then also you think about this. We have a Boise decision where if you're going to move somebody off of public property, you have to have a place for them to go. That's true. But in the meantime, the law also applies. So in a lot of these camps, you have drug dealing going on. You have sexual assaults going on. You've had murders here in Sacramento County. Last time I counted, it was 9 homeless on homeless. And law enforcement has failed to go into these camps and really address some of these issues. Like I said, not necessarily the housing part, but dealing with the crimes. Look at the American River Parkway, over 200 fires in the past 3 years. The amount of resources dedicated to that, the young lady killed in Rancho Cordova, and the Sheriff's Department should be down there on the parkway, patrolling the parkway, dealing with those issues. Most of that parkway is in Sacramento County. The sheriff has an immense amount of authority to go in there and deal with it. They have it. Their hot teams, their homeless outreach teams, they've been cut back. So that's an issue with that. So law enforcement's not the end all the be all. It's a part of it. They got to have good relationships. And I'll point to that is the Board of Supervisors. You've got 5 members. 3 of them support me. I've been told the only time they see the sheriff is during budget hearings. They don't talk to him. He doesn't reach out to him except in the board chambers. You can't have that. You've got to work with those folks. They're a vital part of it. They fund a lot of the homeless outreach stuff. So to me, it's about relationships and working with the board, working with local elected officials. I have the endorsements of the mayors of the big cities in Sacramento that endorse me, and using my 15 years as a mayor and council member to work on some of those things and also leverage those contacts at the state.
Well, on the topic of encampments, especially during the pandemic, law enforcement has been severely limited in removing encampments because of public health reasons. If you want to forcibly remove people, if you're elected sheriff, where do you put them?
Well, number one, it's not forcibly removed. We want to deal with it. I want to deal with the mental illness aspect. It's not being dealt with at any level right now, at a low level, and also substance abuse. So it really takes it with that. So what I'm saying on that, you have crimes going on. Law enforcement and the Sheriff's Department has not gone into those camps at all. You have to do that and deal with that. So, money's coming down. The board is setting up camps right now. So it's really having that partnership and relationships with the Board of Supervisors. The Sheriff's Department doesn't have those relationships right now. They haven't had for the last 16 years. So it's really about accountability, being held accountable and having the tough discussions with people. I want to use that experience to do that. Like I said, I keep going back. You can't build your way out of this with housing. You've got to address the mental health aspect and putting some folks under conservatorship and address the substance abuse. Because what's the quantity of folks that don't want to go in and don't want help? Nobody in Sacramento, nobody in California can tell me that. Folks that have turned down shelter. So there's a lot more to dive into on this issue. But like I said, no one's looking at forcibly removing, but at some point, if someone doesn't want to get the help necessary, then you have to use a carrot and stick approach.
Yeah, and when you talk about, you touched upon conservatorships, what kind of oversight would there be? Would there be any infringement on civil liberties? I mean, could that also is a great deal of power over someone.
Well, right now we have that under a 5150 hold. If someone's a danger to themselves or others, you can take them into protective custody. That doesn't apply, but I would argue if someone's walking around on the street in downtown Sacramento with no clothes on, eating out of a trash can, walking in traffic, that person doesn't have the capacity to make that decision. And that's why you have a conservatorship with neutral parties, not law enforcement. Law enforcement has no involvement in this, but the conservatorship has to happen. And there are groups out there, the ACLU and other groups, that don't want any infringement. So if we continue what we're doing, we're going to get the same result. And right now, it's a spike in homelessness that's not going to disappear anytime soon unless we change the direction that we're headed.
I want to get to staffing in law enforcement departments across the country, including in Sacramento County. I mean, officer vacancies are a challenge. Focusing on solutions and in the spirit of change, how do you hire and retain officers?
Right now, they're down 140 sworn officers' positions. How do you allow yourself to get down that low with that? And then about 100 non-sworn support staff is important to make sure those officers can do their job. So it's frustrating to get down that low. It's about going out, recruiting and hiring. It is tough to get in law enforcement right now. Let's be honest, who wants to be a cop? They take a lot of abuse. They deal with a lot of bad things. They see the public at its worst sometimes, a lot of tragedy in there. So it's a tough job, but you have to go out and cast a wider net.
You would actually be the first Black sheriff in Sacramento County history. Is that simply a headline or is that significant to you?
You know what? I think it's a headline. I mean, I know who I am. I want to be a sheriff for everybody. I want to be inclusive. And I've lived here my whole life. I'm invested. I'm not moving away. And it's important to me to make the department good again. You know, I think it's the lack of leadership during the past 12 years has really impacted the department. And it's got to change. And even just the public wants transparency, they want accountability.
But you're not running against the sheriff. You're running against the undersheriff, Jim Barnes, and in a SACB profile, who he calls you a friend. I mean, is it fair to compare one person against another? Undersheriff Jim Barnes, isn't he his own person?
Well, in the last year, he was the captain, chief, and the undersheriff. He has an immense amount of authority, an immense amount of control over those things. He's Scott's handpicked successor. So when Scott Jones picks him, he picks him for a reason, because he agrees with Scott's policies. So it's really easy to go out and talk and say, hey, I'm not that. That's not me. And that's really, being disingenuous.
Well, on that note, Sacramento County District Attorney Anne Marie Schubert endorsed you. District Attorney Schubert is running for State Attorney General. Also criticized, though, for failing to prosecute any officer in controversial deadly shootings, and whose office has also been the site of demonstrations for systemic change. I mention that because endorsements can be seen as sharing approaches in how to lead. And the incumbent she's running against, Attorney General Rob Bonta, former Democratic colleague of yours at the state capitol. What does Schubert's endorsement mean to you?
Well, it means a lot in Sacramento County. And obviously, you look at the state of California, it's very different, different politics and how we deal with it. I've worked with Anne Marie Schubert for 8 years over here on DNA, the Golden State Killer, a lot of bills that really help the public. So she's done a lot for victims' rights. I believe in victims' rights. My passion is women, children, and dealing with sexually violent predators. So that aligns with my politics on that. So that's I can't describe it any other way. She's continually fought and for victims, and I've been done that for 8 years. So that's really the big issue. And if someone's got a problem with that, then I would look at what's going on in this state lately regarding some of the laws that we passed. It really hasn't helped the victims, and I'm here for the victims.
Undersheriff Barnes, who's running against you, has criticized your vote for a so-called sanctuary state law enacted in 2017. It protects undocumented immigrants from federal immigration officials. He connected that with the mass shooting in Arden, a father killing his children and a chaperone in a murder-suicide. He was in the country illegally. He bailed out of jail in Merced County 5 days prior. The mother also had a restraining order against him. Could this have been prevented?
You know, if someone's going to want to go out and commit that act, they can, number one. And that's the big thing. People have to understand that. Number two, when that bill first came out, was first introduced, all of law enforcement was opposed to it. All of law enforcement, you go back and this is where he talks about things. And Mr. Barnes's office was 2 miles from the Capitol. They never came in down and testified. They're not on record opposing the bill. They never sent a letter in. But all of law enforcement statewide was opposed to it. I forced amendments on that bill. It did a lot of things that were not good. If you do an investigation, you need to publish your investigation on the website of the Attorney General's office. And a lot of things that really harmed law enforcement. So at the end of the day, when that bill finally passed because of forced amendments, only one organization in the state was opposed to it. Everyone else went neutral. So that's the important thing to show someone's, I'm not going to say ignorance, but lack of understanding of how the process works. So if you go back right now, look at that bill and look at the opposition from law enforcement, the District Attorneys Association, you don't see it. Because in its original form, that bill did a lot of damage. So at the end of the day, the bill was made better. So that's the bottom line. But like I said, for him to throw that out irresponsibly, And I'm going to say he was very responsible in that. He doesn't even know the system, how it works, how bills work in opposition. But LA sheriffs are down here testifying. Orange County has full-time people testifying. San Bernardino. Where's the Sacramento Sheriff's Department been? They've never testified in 8 years in any hearing down here or submitted a letter on behalf of their own agency on these policies. So it says a lot about them when they're 2 miles away from the Capitol.
There have been 2 mass shootings in Sacramento this year. The second was just a month ago in downtown Sacramento. Nationwide, the firearm homicide rate is up 35% since the start of the pandemic, highest level in 25 years. There are 15 million more guns in circulation than prior to the pandemic, and that's according to UC Davis. The sheriff is responsible for approving concealed carry weapon permits. What role do firearms play in the recent rise of firearm violence, including firearm suicide?
Well, I think, number one, look at the incident that happened on K Street Mall. Those folks are prohibited from owning firearms. You have to enforce the laws. It's not the folks that were, it's not legal gun owners. It's prohibited folks, and that's been the big issue. And as far as penalties, folks don't want to see any increased penalties with that. So you have to balance that. And really look at the stats of legal gun owners. You don't see it there, or concealed weapons holders. I support concealed weapon permits. When you go back, but when you go back and look at the numbers on that, it's folks like Smiley Martin, who was on parole and wasn't supposed to possess guns.
The fact that there's 15 more million more guns in circulation than prior to the pandemic, is that concerning at all to you?
Is that nationwide or in California?
Nationwide.
Well, you look at big states like Texas. I mean, I don't know what the percentage is in California, but it's always concerning. But once again, ghost guns. I got one of the only bills signed by the governor on ghost guns before. So ghost guns are important. We need to enforce those laws. So the hard part is, it's California, but what percentage of those guns were in California versus the rest of the nation? You know, we have some of the strictest gun laws in California. Violent crime's up because the people that we need to hold accountable aren't being held accountable. And that's really the big issue.
That also brings me to an incident where you brought a loaded firearm to Sacramento International Airport, which is unlawful. Does that set the right example? As a former law enforcement officer, someone running as sheriff, shouldn't there be a higher bar of responsibility?
There's a higher bar, and I made a mistake. You're dealing with human beings. People are going to make mistakes. I made a mistake. It was an accident. As a peace officer, I spent 30 years in the sheriff's department. I worked undercover for 10 years. A lot of people disliked me from putting people in jail. There were songs written about killing me. I've had threats on my life. Previously, I've had people patrol my house, officers. So, you know what? I made a mistake. It happens more often than you think. And no excuse. I've never made an excuse whatsoever. When you deal with human beings, we're not computers. We will make mistakes.
I want to get back to Proposition 57, which you've been critical of, but voters ultimately approved. It allows inmates convicted of nonviolent crimes to earn credits for good behavior and in turn earn parole faster. Would you go as far to say that voters got it wrong in 2016?
Voters got duped, and that's the only way I can say it. I think voters are intelligent, but you know, people are trying to pay their bills and raise families, and it's hard to delve into. They got duped on Prop 57 and Prop 47. Did the Sheriff's Department weigh in on it? No. So to me, you can't have your cake and eat it too. And that's the big issue. You've got to be engaged. You've got to be down here. This is the capital city of California, the largest state in the nation. And you should be down here all the time. There's no reason not to be down here being engaged with your politicians. And the sheriff's department has zero relationship with any of their members in the legislature.
When talking about the root causes, though, of incarceration, why do you believe the prison system is disproportionately inmates of color?
Number one, I think it's the important thing. Look at those neighborhoods where folks come from. And in the areas in Sacramento, what do they have in common? They have no banks, no supermarkets, no sports programs or arts programs for kids. That's the bottom line. They build up areas of Sacramento and invest a lot of money. But in those poor areas, you see no investments in there. So it's not only a law enforcement issue, it's a public issue. So you've got to see the public come in and also government come in and help. But you can drive around those same areas in Sacramento. They've been that way for 30, 40, 50 years. And that's a big part of the problem. And their schools are underperforming. So it's really been a big issue. And people expect law enforcement to be the answer to it. And it's not the answer. You've got to be community partners. That's why at three of my high schools in my district, if you improve your GPA, your attendance, and citizenship, I take you to Facebook, Google, and Levi Stadium to talk about jobs in STEM. So very heavy on that. My passion is children. I've been on the boards for Big Brothers and Big Sisters, the Boys and Girls Club, Children's Receiving Home, and Wing Youth Services. This is outside the Sheriff's Department. For over 30 years, I've always focused on kids, not just my day job when I worked with a badge on.
Finally, Assembly Member, if elected Sheriff, this time next year, you join us on Insight. What do you want to talk about?
Whatever the hot issue is. Right now, the number one issue is homelessness. Number two is crime.
Thank you so much, Assembly Member.
Thank you.
That is Assembly Member Jim Cooper running for Sacramento County Sheriff. Our conversation was recorded yesterday. This is just one of dozens of races for the primary election. We here at Cap Radio are picking up momentum, getting you up to speed so you feel prepared and confident when casting your ballot. The primary election is June 7th, but you can submit your mail-in ballot anytime leading up to that day. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Last month, we devoted every Thursday at Insight celebrating local unsigned musicians across Northern California who became part of NPR's annual Tiny Desk Contest. After thousands of entries across the country, NPR selected this year's national winner. So we're going to close the hour with winner Alisa Amador from Boston, Massachusetts. Alisa's winning song is Milonga Accidental, which is entirely in Spanish and described in her words as an ode to in-betweenness, to having several identities at once, to feeling split between cultures and languages, and a song about embracing your contradictions and for anyone who's felt out of place or like they don't fit neatly under one label. As you're about to learn, her voice transcends language.
Cuando miro afuera, cuando miro adentro, cuando miro afuera otra vez, de la periferia hasta el mero centro, siempre soy testigo y juez. ¿Cuándo sabré descifrar mi razón? Sentiré mi hogar en mi voz. Cuando miro el agua, cuando miro el cielo, cuando miro el agua otra vez, de lo más profundo a este momento, quiero ser el agua. ¿Cuándo sentiré mi hogar?
beautiful is that? That is this year's Tiny Desk Contest winner, Elisa Amador from Boston, Massachusetts. If you want to explore hundreds of Northern California entries, we've also narrowed them down to a list on our Insight page, including my favorites this year. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. Thank you to producer Nick Dobis with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Chris Feltz. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. And I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.